A morning out of stuff in Shabbos is Gimel. We are on the very bottom of Beis Mabeit, starting at the two dots. Amalei Rav Masna Le Abaye. We started the Nimasechta yesterday. The first Mishnah on Shabbos, we talked about the Malacha of Hotza'ah. It is just the first Mishnah that discusses the Malacha of Hotza'ah. After that, we go to Erev Shabbos. But that won't be for a while. We are going to be a week here discussing the Malacha of Hotza'ah, and in doing so, the Mishnah illustrated this through an example. The Mishnah's example involved an Ani and a Balabais. The Ani, obviously, on the outside, the Balabais in his house. The Balabais living in Rishos Yachid. And the Ani is in Rishos Rabim. And the Mishnah goes through numerous scenarios in which a transfer is made from either the Ani to the Balabais or from the Balabais to the Ani. And what we did is we went through four scenarios where they each performed the malacha of Hotzah. Hotzah is to take something from a Rishos Yachid to a Rishos Rabim. There's also Hachnasa, taking something from a Rishos Rabim into a Rishos Yachid. Let us say that Hachnasa is the Talad, that's a subcategory of Hotzah. The Mishnah illustrated this by four different scenarios. Just quickly running through the scenarios of the Mishnah, we start with a case where the Ani takes something from the Rishus HaRabim and brings it into the Rishus Yachid. So the first example of the Mishnah is Hachnasa. As we pointed out yesterday, in order to violate the Malacha of Hotzah, there needs to be an Akira and an Anacha, which means to say that you have to pick something up from the Rishus HaRabim, in this case of Hachnasa, and you need to be Meiniach, you need to put it down, deposit it in the Rishus HaYachid. It's clear from the Mishnah, by the way, you don't have to be standing in the Rishus HaYachid, you just merely need to deposit it in the Rishus HaYachid, and then you have violated the Malacha. Second example of the Mishnah has the Balabais doing the Akira and doing the Hanacha. In other words, he puts it into the hand of the Ani. So in both of these circumstances, you have Hachnasa. They are both examples of Hachnasa. I'm sorry. The first example is Hachnasa. The second example is Hotzah. Right? The Mishnah illustrates both examples. And in doing so, we have gone through two examples of the Malacha of Hotzah. The Mishnah then gives two more examples of Hotzah. The third example is where a Hotzah is done on the part of the Balabais. And the fourth example, the Hotzah is done by the, in the fourth example, Achnas is done, and it's done by the Balabais. So those are the four examples in the Mishnah in which Hotzah, Achnas are done. Now, it seems to be a little repetitive in nature, and I pointed this out yesterday, and Tosas pointed this out yesterday. If I may, I'm going to just go back to yesterday's stuff just to read the Tosas. I didn't read it inside yesterday, so it just affords me just a moment to read the Tosas. Tosas wonders why the Mishnah has to illustrate this with so many different examples, where basically, after the first two examples, we already get the point. Meaning the first example is Achnas, the second example is Hotzah, and then the Mishnah reviews and gives us another example of Hotzah and another example of Achnasa. By the way, I just charted this out because, obviously, as you can see, it's a little bit confusing in terms of the scenarios. But example number one is Achnasa, example two and three are Hotzah, example four is back to Achnasa, but it seems to be repetitive. And if you see the fourth Tosus on the Amud of yesterday's daf, Tamilari, what is that? Why do we have to go over two scenarios with the Ani, two scenarios with the Balabais? And Tosas notes that the same thing is true in Shavuos, and where we saw the same thing. And Tosas points out also, there are multiple drushas for the Malach of Hotza'ah, and why is there a need for multiple drushas for Hotza'ah? And so Tosas writes, I'm going to skip a little bit in the Tosas, and we're going to go down to the fifth line of Tosfos, and Vahasam Pei Rashi, I explained over there, the word Pirashi is the beginning of the line of Tosfos. So Tosfos says, because the Malacha of Hotzah is a Malacha Gerua, it's an inferior Malacha. What is this idea that a Malacha of Hotzah is an inferior Malacha? So as I pointed out yesterday, but I'll reiterate today, no way does Tosfos mean that it's any less a Malacha than the other 38 Malachas. 39 Malachas in total, and this is the 39th Malacha. It actually, when we get to the Mishnah in the seventh parak, we're going to learn together. It is number 39 in the list, but one would certainly be subject to all the onshim, all the punishments that are given to somebody who violates the malacha b'mezid, and b'shogeg, a person has to bring a carbon chatas. So what does it mean that it's a malacha gerua? So Tosus writes over here, it's when Tosus says malacha gerua, so what he must mean by that is that it's inferior in the sense that it's not the qualitatively the same as the other malachas. The other malachas involve an activity, a creative activity, cooking, stitching, weaving. They all involve some sort of creative activity. Over here, moving an item from A to B, from point A to point B, that's not a creative activity. That's just simply moving an item from point A to point B. And so in this regard, so the malacha looks different than the other malachas, and because of that, so therefore everything has to be spelled out. It has to be spelled out in terms of the drashas. That's the Gemara. That's the Gemara giving us two drashas. We haven't seen the drashas yet. One drasha is coming up much later in the Masecht on Daf Tzadivav. There's one drasha on Tzadivav. There's another drasha in Erevin. Okay, but in other words, but the drashas have to be spelled out in order to give us this malacha. There are no other malachas that we learn out through a drasha. Although Eish could be cited as an example. But there are no other malachas. The malachas we know because the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And meanwhile, this malacha has to be spelled out in the Torah. And on top of that, Tosfos now points out, it's derech tavayu chadla ani v'chadla asher. So that means to say now that we're going to have to learn out hotzah two times over. Hotzah from the perspective of the ani and hotzah from the perspective of the Baal Bayis. Meaning hotzah means to take it from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim. Who takes it out? So the Mishnah has to spell it out. Both in the case where the Baal Bayis takes something out or when the ani pulls something out. So the Mishnah has to go over both, because when we have a malacha grua, when we have this inferior malacha, everything has to get spelled out. V'chein b'chol toladus davos malachos v'chayshinan shiei b'mishkan. And as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, when we're talking about a tolada is a subcategory of the av. The av is what's found in the Mishkan, and the tolada, not necessarily. As long as it has the same characteristics as the av, it's a tolada. Meanwhile, when it comes to the malacha of hotza'ah, Tosfos says, you have to spell it out. So, and not only that, the tolada, in this case, the tolada being hachnasa, has to be found in the Mishkan. Ela avos bavan, v'toladus da'otza, by shehei b'mishkan. And here we find the phenomena that this tolada of hachnasa has to be in the Mishkan. Every aspect of hotza'a has to be in the Mishkan. Didnan ba'azarik, and he gives numerous examples where we see this. I'm not going to go through the rest of Tosfos over here. But basically, because it's a malacha gerua, so the Torah has to spell it out. The Mishnayos have to spell out all these cases. The tolada has to be found. It has to be evident in the Mishkan. Because of this, quote-unquote, weaker nature, this inferior nature to the malacha of hotzah. That's why the Mishnah gives so many scenarios. Okay. We did this yesterday, but it is a really fundamental point in terms of the malacha of hotzah. Additionally, the Mishnah also gave other examples as well. The Mishnah gave four other scenarios where one is not violating the malacha on a daraita level, but on a derabban level. And the four additional scenarios in the Mishnah are also patterned in the same format. An example of achnasa and two examples of hotzah, followed then by another example of achnasa. And again, the repetitive nature is because we're just looking at it from the perspective of either the Baal Bayis or the ani. Why is it a malacha derabban and not a malacha daraisa? Because one of them did the akira and the other one did the hanacha. To violate the malacha, you have to do both the akira and the hanacha. But because in our Mishnah, one did the akira and the other one did the hanacha, so therefore that is an issa derabanan. Now, presumably, it's an issa derabanan on both the ani and the Baal Bayis. But as we learned yesterday in Rashi, and the Gemara will say today as well, we're going to see a little bit later this morning, in terms of counting it, we only count it as one issa derabanan. Why? Well, because the one who did the akira, so he's the one who potentially could be violating an issa d'oraisa. So therefore, the issa d'rabbanan that the Mishnah is counting is only on the oker, on the one who did the act of picking it up, but not on the other, but not on the one who put it down. Okay, that's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. What we have now in the Mishnah is really eight different scenarios. Four of them where one did both the akira and the hanacha, and therefore subject to an issa d'oraisa of hotzah. And four, the remaining four, is where the malacha was shared between the two. One did the akira, the other did the hanacha, and the is not an issa d'oraisa, but rather an issa d'rabbanan. Adkan, that takes us to the Mishnah, and in yesterday's daf, all we did yesterday is a side-by-side comparison of our Mishnah here in Shabbos and the Mishnah in Shavuos. The Mishnah in Shavuos also gives us the Yitzias Shabbos Shtayim Shein Arba, two violations which become four. The difference is that our Mishnah goes over both the Bifnim and Bechutz. The Mishnah in Shavuos does not. The Mishnah in Shavuos just simply says, Yitzias Shabbos, Shtayim Shein Arba. And why is the Mishnah in Shavuos look different? So that was yesterday's daf. And yesterday we went over what would be the difference between the Mishnah in Shabbos versus the Mishnah in Shavuos. With all that stated now, well, let's pick it up where we left off yesterday in the bottom of the Amud. Amale Rav Masda L'Abaye, Hatam Yahave, Tartisrein Havya. So the Gemara over here asks the question, why are we counting eight? There should be 12. In other words, not 12 cases, but 12 different Isurim. Meaning the first four, like we already said, those are the Isuri Daraisa. But then the next four really represents not four Isurim, but eight Isurim. Because each one of the subsequent four cases are cases in which one did the Akir and the other did the Hanacha. So that really now is two. Two times four is eight. Eight plus the first four is 12. So the Gemara is bothered by the fact that why is the Mishnah counting telling us eight? It's not eight. It should really be 12.
But it's not 12.
No, we're not changing the cases. Cases remain the same. The number of Yisurim, however, should be 12. So So the Gemara says, okay, look, if it's an accounting issue, the Gemara says, well, really, it should be 16. Because consider, even in the first four cases, so it's true that the Balabais did both the Akira and the Hanacha, or the Ani, whichever case it is. It's true that they did the Akira and the Hanacha. However, there's also a person receiving it, and the person receiving it, so the Mishnah says, for that person receiving it, he's Pater. Now, as we're going to learn in just a moment, Pater over there means Mutter. Now, that's a strange usage of the word Pater, but the Mishnah uses the word Pater. So the Gemara says, so why don't we count those as well? And that brings us another four. Now, I'm going to use the word Isurim, but you understand, I'm using it really lightly. In other words, it's not Nisr. But there are four Peturim, that we could say like that, another four Peturim. So now it should really be a total of 16. So the Tamech Shitzer Havyan Amalei Halokasha. So he says, yeah, but that didn't bother me. Bishlam, as we are now on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, Bava Dereisha, Pater Mutter. We all know that in the first four cases, the recipient is not only Pater, but Pater Mutter. Okay, as we know, Klal Gadol is a big rule here in Shabbos. You see the word Chayiv, it means the Nisa Dereisha. When you see the word Pater, it 99% of the time means Pater Lavas of Alasar. It's a rabbinic prohibition. One's not allowed to do it. It is not Nisa Daraisa. There's no carbon chatzis if done by Shogeg. There's no skila if done by Mezid. But Pater means it's usser. Pater just simply means you're exempt from bringing a carbon chatzis. Mm-hmm. What we're saying over here is in our Mishnah, it really, the first four Paters, meaning Pater umutter. It actually means it's mutter. So, Bava Dereisha Pater umutter lo ketani. So, that doesn't bother me, meaning, of course, we're not going to count that. Because it's nothing, it's zero. El Bava de Sefer de Pater Valas or Kasha. But in the second four cases of the Mishnah, where each one of them is doing an activity involved in either the Akira or the Hanacha, so that's Mamash and Issa de Rabbanan on both. And so you should count that up, bring them up for two. So that's two times four, that's eight. And plus the first four. So that's what bothered me. Aval Asr Kasha. Mi'ika Bakula Shabbos. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. The usage of the word pater, and pater meaning pater mutter, is there a precedent for that? And the Gemara says, yes, actually there is. Now, there is a precedent for that, but the way Shmuel says it, it sounds like, here I'm giving you the only three examples where pater means pater umutter. And the three examples are, the pater umutter, tzedat tzvit, tzedat nachash, mapis mursa. So the trapping of a deer, the trapping of a snake, and mapis morsa, the squeezing of a pimple. So these on Shabbos are pater, but in those contexts, pater means pater or mutter. Now, in terms of the details over here, why would one be allowed to engage in these activities? Seda is a malacha, mapis morsa, squeezing of a pimple. So when you're making an opening, so and if you're making it in a house, so that's called binyan. When you're making it in a body, that also is described as a form of binyan. So over here, the description of these three activities are what's called pater umutter. So why is it in a malacha? So the answer, the simple answer is because it's a malacha shein tzirich l'gufa. But we really haven't gone over the concept of malacha shein tzirich l'gufa. So for our purposes right now, let's just gloss right over it. We're going to come back to these three examples, and we're going to explain them much better later in the Masechta. But anyway, according to Shmuel, this is it. This is the entire list of things which are pater umutter. So if that's true, so then our Mishnah obviously didn't make the list. So the Gemara says, Ki itzrech le'lishmo patur dekavin maisei. So the Gemara says, no, there are plenty of patur and mutters throughout Shabbos, and Masechta Shabbos and Hilchos Shabbos. But in terms of the three that Shmuel enumerated, those are when you're doing an action. And so what Shmuel wanted to highlight is these are three times in Shas, in Mishnayos, where you're doing an action and the Mishnah uses the word pater and it means pater mutter. Pater de lo kavin maisi ketuvah. But if it's something where you're not doing any action whatsoever, in our case, what is the Baal HaBayis doing when he's receiving the object from the Ani? And the answer is nothing. He's not doing a thing. And so therefore, that's obvious, meaning he didn't do anything. It's pater mutter. So the Gemara says it doesn't bother me. The fact that the first four cases says pater, we all understand. Pater means pater mutter. However, question becomes, the next four cases of the Mishnah, where one does the akira, the other does the anacha, so that's two isuri derabanan, so that's two times four, because there are four cases, four latter cases, so that should be eight. So there should be a total of 12. Why are you telling me that there are only eight isurim in the Mishnah? Mikama kam tatisrei havyan. So back to our original question of 12. So the Gemara says, "Patur dasi behu lidechiv chatzis kachashiv, delo asi behu lidechiv chatzis lo kachashiv." So the Gemara says, "Okay, and now we're going to go back to what we said yesterday. But yesterday we saw it in Rashi. Today we're seeing it in the Gemara, and that is that in the latter four cases, we're only counting the paturim that are asi lidei chiyuv chatzis that will lead to a chiyuv chatzis, and that explains Rashi is the one who did the akira, because the one who did the akira, it's true that in these cases." The other one did the hanacha, but it's possible that the one who did the akira is going to be doing the hanacha, resulting in him being chayv a karban chatas. So that's why we're only counting the oker, not the one who did the hanacha. Not to say the one who did the hanacha is totally off the hook. No, he violated Nisr de Rabbanan. But in terms of accounting and how to count the cases of the Mishnah is only counting the cases where it was a possibility of being violating Nisr de Raisa. That is Rashi's understanding. The truth of the matter is, if you take a look at Rashi inside, Rashi also quotes an alternative pshat in the name of his Rebbeim, but the Rashi's first pshat, the one that he favors, is the one that I just offered. Ushtein Peturim probably could be omitted from the Gemara over here. Seems to be a little bit out of place. But anyway, Vaha Isav de Malacha mi Beinayu. So the Gemara now asks the question. We all know the answer, but the Gemara never formally said it. Here the Gemara now is going to formally say it. And that is that if I have one person doing the akira and the other person doing the anacha, okay, sum total, a malacha was done. And so the Gemara says, so if a malacha was done, so shouldn't there be a chiyuv karban chatas? Now, the Gemara over here doesn't relate to us who should be, who is the one holding the bag. Meaning, even in this question, there's going to be an answer to this question, and we all know the answer already. But at least in the formulation of the Gemara's question, where now the Gemara is wondering, yeah, but there's an Issa Daraisa, someone should be in violation of Issa Daraisa, so the Gemara doesn't say. Now, on one hand, you could argue the Gemara's question is going on the Oker, on the one who picked it up, because we just learned together, because he's the one who potentially could be violating an Issa Daraisa. On the other hand, one could also see an argument that it's going on the one who did the Hanacha, because he's the Gomer, he's the one who's finishing the Malacha. Okay. And to say that the Gemara's question is going on both, okay, it could be. Anyway, the Gemara is going to answer. And Tanya Rebbe Omer, may im ha'aretz ba'asosa, or may ama aretz asosa. The pasuk in Vayikra formulating the requirement to bring a karmen chatas. Now the pasuk over here is a generic discussion of a person who violates an isur kares b'shogeg, and the Torah is just simply talking about somebody who is just simply doing an action. But the point is that whenever one is going to be subject to a chiyuv karban chatas, he must be doing the entire action. Ha'o says kula v'lo asos miksasa. You must be doing the entire action and not just simply part of an action. Yachid v'aso osa chayiv, shnayim v'asu osa peturim. So when one individual violates the malacha, so then he's going to be chayiv karban chatas. But when two people are doing any kind of iser, so they are going to be patur. And so this is what's called the principle known as Shnaim Shasua, two people doing a malacha, where it's going to be pater. Remember yesterday we learned together the first Tosfos. Tosfos says one of the reasons why the Masechta opened up with Hotzah, which again, as we pointed out yesterday, that's a strange opening of the Masechta. It's not Erev Shabbos, meaning we're not talking about Erev Shabbos, which is going to be the vast majority Mishnayos of our first Perek and our second Perek, etc., etc. So the reason why, one of the reasons, says Tosfos, is because we get to learn these very fundamental principles. Shnayim Shasua is a fundamental principle of Shabbos. And so therefore, the reason why we introduced this is just to get to this point over here, so we get to learn this fundamental principle. Itmar Nami, the Gemara also notes, Am Rebbe Chia Bar Gamda, Nizrika Mipi Chabura, it was said amongst the Chabura, V'amru Ba'asosa, Yachid Shasu Chayev, Shnayim Shasua Peturim, the Chabura said it as well, and therefore it's fundamental. It's a basic principle. And that's why there's not going to be a Chiv Karban, because when a Malach is done by a shared communal effort, so then there's not going to be a Chiv Karban, a Chatas. One small point and then a larger point. A small point is the structure of the Gemara is a little bit strange. Meaning, how did the Gemara teach us this idea of Shnayim Shasua? So the first thing the Gemara did is it brought a Braisa. And then the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, Amoraim say it as well. That's reversed. That's backwards. Meaning, if an Amora says something, and then it's supported by a Braisa, good. In other words, the Braisa supports that which the Amora says. Over here, the Braisa says it, and then the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, Amoraim say it as well. Like, that's, you know, that's not exciting. So your suggestion, your suggestion is exactly what Tosu says, right? Tosu said Marnami, so he's bothered by this by the structural issue of the Gemara over here, and he suggests that maybe that's it. Maybe they're quoting Tanaim, although they don't say that, but that's a suggestion. A larger issue, really larger issue, but we'll just bring it up, and I'll show you where to look for it. And that is that the Gemara says that in the case of where one of them did the Akira the Anacha, either the Ani or the Balabais, and the other one is just simply the recipient, so the Gemara says Pater or Mutter. He is totally off the hook because he did no involvement whatsoever in the Malacha of Hotzah. So that part's true. However, what did he do? So he created a scenario where somebody else violated Nisr. It's what's called being Machshil somebody, Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. The Torah says you're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of another Jew. And so that means to say then that if you are not doing anything, but you are facilitating and you're aiding and you're abetting somebody to violate an Isser, so you're a violation of Lifnei Iver. So the Gemara's conclusion that this person got off scot-free, so scot-free? He's in violation of Lifnei Iver, isn't he? So there you can see the Taptosos where he discusses this issue. V'im tomer v'haka avar Lifnei Iver, lo siten mechshol. So the one who's receiving, so he's in violation of Lifnei Iver. And maybe you'll tell me, okay, but the malacha could have been done without him. And we know that there's a distinction where you are essential for the Isser to be violated, or you're just simply there, and it could have been done without you. So Mukalab Perakam the Masakh Savaras Kocham, the Kabitray Avidinahare, me komakom Isr Durabanan Mia Ika Shekhaiv La Frisha Mi Isr. Okay, so even if it's not technically Lifnei Iver, because it could have happened without you, but still, if you're there and you're facilitating, so in the very least that's an Isr Durabanan, so why doesn't the Mishnah count the Isr Durabanan of Lifnei Iver, or the language of the Gemara elsewhere is Misayeya? Misayel Dvar Avera.
Lifnei Iver is you do something and then the other person does the Avera because of you. But here he already did the Akol. So how does that Lifnei Iver? The other guy already did his part. So by putting in your hand, you didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything, but still, you're creating.
Lifnei Iver usually is before the Avera is done.
It's before the Avera is done.
Like you give a cost to a Nozir. All
right. Yeah, but
so there is. Hasn't done yet anything. So,
but yeah, but you're. It's not before, but it's during. It's during. Yeah, okay.
It's like
fine. Okay. Anyway, to see the rest of Tosus for his suggestion of why Lifnei Iver is not brought up, I have in my notes also take a look at the Tosus Harash. Okay, this is. That's the easiest answer. Tosus, by the way, does not give that answer. But that's the easiest answer, meaning that we're focusing on Malacha Shabbos. Right. So the Gemara's usage of the word Pater Mutter is just vis-a-vis Shabbos, right? Right. Right. Okay. So, right. Good. That's an easy answer. Easy answer. And Rishonim do give that answer. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, we're in Gimel Amud Aleph towards the bottom of the Amud at the two dots by Mine Rav Me Rebbe. The following question was asked from Rebbe. Hitino Chav Ero Ochlenu Mashkin Vahotzi Alechutz Mahu. Okay. So. Just a brief introduction to the Gemara's question over here. Let's take a look back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave numerous scenarios of Akira and Anacha. Now, in the scenario, so you had one person standing outside and the other person standing on the inside. Now, in the Mishnah, also, here's what became super clear. In the latter four cases of the Mishnah, the first two, the Ani sticks his hand inside. And either then the Baal HaBayis takes it from him, or the Baal HaBayis gives it to him. And then in the next two cases of the Mishnah, the Baal HaBayis takes his hand outside. Now, it's clear from the Mishnah. When you just take your hand and you move it from one domain to another domain, that in halacha is nothing. It has to be. Because if you think about it, if the moving of your hand is significant from one domain to another, just by mere virtue of the fact that you took your hand and moved it from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYachid, so you're violating the malacha, right? And the answer is no, you're not. The Mishnah told us you're not. So it's clear that your hand, just because it switched locations, is not considered an Akira, not considered a Hanacha. Fine. That's a given. Now, with that stated, the Gemara wants to know. So to do an Akira means what? It's very simple. Picking something off the floor or picking something off the table. That's an Akira. Let's say you didn't do the actual action of picking something up, i.e., somebody put something on you, and then you started walking. Does that qualify as an Akira? That's the Gemara's basic question. So let's see the Gemara inside. So the Gemara says, "By me, Rabbi, Rabbi, Hitinu Chaver Ochlin Umashkin." Somebody put on you food and drink, Votzi and Lechutz, and you took it outside. Mahu Akira Skufa Kakira Schaifas Mimkam Adami? So is your moving of your body considered Akiras Chayfetz, or is the moving of your body not considered Akiras Chayfetz? Now again, the Gemara is juxtaposing the question against what we learned together in the Mishnah. Moving your hand from one location to another is nothing. It's zero. How about moving your body? Is that considered an Akiras Chayfetz? Doesn't matter.
No.
The question is on the person. The question is on the person who's walking. So the Amar Lei Chayev. So his answer is that that person would be Chayev, meaning the fact that he started walking, that's called an Akira. Ve'ino Dom Eliyado. And now you see already in the answer what the question was. I mean, I spelled it out. I knew it was coming. But but in the answer, you see what the question was. And don't compare it to a hand. The moving of your body is not comparable to a hand. My taima, gufo, nayach, yadolo nayach. Because we could say vis-a-vis your body that that is a stationary item. When you're taking your body, which is a stationary item, and then you start moving it into motion, that's called an akira. That's called taking an item from a position of rest to a position of motion. And that's why that qualifies as akira. So when someone puts the food and drink on you and you start walking, that qualifies as akira. But just because your hand went from one domain to another, that's nothing, because your hand is not considered stationary. Yadolonayach, your hand is not moving. And so therefore, look at Rashi. Yadolonayach, hilkach, chiyotzia, lo akamidi. Ve'ein derech hotzah, b'lo akira v'hanacha. Look, hotzah, the malach of hotzah requires akira hanacha. And when your hand, which is a non-stationary item, is going from one domain to another domain, that simply is nothing. And so that's why your hand switching domains doesn't qualify. Your body switching domains, so that in fact does qualify. So Amar Lei, now remember, who asked the question? Rav asked the question from Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Now to that, Amar Lei, as we turn now to the Amud Beis, Amar Lei Rebbe Chiya Rav, Bar Pachse. So Rebbe Chiya says to Rav, wait 1 second. In other words, we have the scenario all the time throughout Shas. Rav is learning under Rebbe. Rebbe Chiya was usually present. Rebbe Chiya was Rav's uncle, a contemporary Rebbe, a Talmud of Rebbe. So Rebbe Chiya says to Rav, can I just share with you? I know you asked him a good question. You shouldn't have asked him that question. Why? Bar Pachsi is Rebbe Chiya's nickname for Rav. Rashi describes as Ben Gedolim. You're son of a great man. So, lo amin alach, I already told you. Ki kai Rebbe b'ha mesechta lo tishal b'mesechta achrita. While Rebbe's learning another mesechta, so don't ask him a question, this mesechta. Right now, Rebbe's not holding a mesechta Shabbos. Now, him not holding a mesechta Shabbos is much different than you and I not holding a mesechta Shabbos. We're talking about Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, Masadra Mishnayos, right? He's holding. But still, right, what you asked him is a question that requires thought and conceptualization. And don't ask him a question like that while he's not currently in the mesechta. Damalavadaite. And he's not there. And his mind is not there. Dilav de Rebbe Gavarabba, who now happens to have been Rebbe. And he's a great man. But had it not been for that kisifta, you would have embarrassed him. Because he would have been honest. He would have said, I don't know. And to say publicly, I don't know. Now, I've already gotten over the embarrassment. I'm comfortable saying I don't know. But for a gadol to say I don't know, so yeah, that's an embarrassing situation. And he's gonna then give an answer which is not perfectly grounded in sources and don't do that. But hashtamia shapir mishanlach. It happens to be that Rebbe not only gave you the right answer, that's a given, but it's sourced. The Tanya, we have a Braisa. Now, this is Rabbi Chia quoting a Braisa, right? It's nice how that works out. The Tanya, Hayatan, Ochlan, Amashim, Mibo, Yom, Votzian, Lechutz, Mishachashecha, Chayv, Lefish, Eno, Dom, Liadom. The Braisa says it straight out that somebody puts food and drink on you, Mibo, Yom, before Shabbos. And Tosus points out over here, you had to have come to a resting point before Shabbos. Meaning, if you were still in constant motion, so then that's not an Akira. An Akira means that you have to be in a position of stopping and then starting. But once you do that, so now the Akira is done. So and by the way, the Gemara says it. I mean, you don't need Tosfos for this. And it has to be, just give me a second. And it has to be that your motion started after Shabbos began. The Akira has to occur on Shabbos. And now Chayev, and you would be Chayev. Lefi Sheina Dom Eliyado, and it's not the same as your hand. Now, if you didn't know our Mishnah, you wouldn't understand the point of the Braisa. It's not similar to the hand. What hand? What are you talking about? Oh, but now you have to go back to the Mishnah. You see how the Braisa is really a supplemental to the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that when hands transfer locations, so the Mishnah says that's insignificant, halachically insignificant. Ah, but when your body transfers location, that's significant. And then we're going to go back to Rebbe's point of the difference between hands versus body. Gufo nayach, yadolo nayach. But still, the point is that the Braisa says exactly what Rebbe said, that the hand and the body are not the same, not to be compared, and so therefore the moving of your body is considered an akira. And we'll also add that the stopping of your body is considered a hanacha, meaning when you're carrying something and you moved into the new domain and you stopped, the stoppage is also now considered a hanacha. Well, that seems to be an obvious point. Not only is it an obvious point, but Rashi makes the very same point as well. Okay.
That doesn't bother us that it should be the next step that he takes when it comes into Shabbos should be the akira to complete his anocha. In other words, he started 2 minutes before this month.
Yeah, but the malachas can only be violated on Shabbos.
So even with the
dance, yeah, you have to violate the malacha on Shabbos. You can talk about Isur de Rabbanu, which the Gemara is about to do, but in terms of the malacha, you have to do it on Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Pshita liyado shaladam eino lo kerushos harabim velo kerushos hayachid. So Abai says, okay, let's start off with things that are clear to me and things that are obvious to me. The hand of a person is not like a Rishus Rabim, it's not like a Rishus Yachid. Rishus Rabim lo damya, it's not like a Rishus Rabim miyado dani. And I know that because of the hand of the Ani. Meaning, consider that when the Ani takes his hand, which, and remember, the Ani is standing outside in the Rishus Rabim, when he takes his hand and brings it inside, and the Baal HaBayis takes it from the hand of the Ani. So here's what you could have argued, that the Baal HaBayis is taking it from Rishus Rabim. You could have argued that. The Ani is physically standing in the Rishus HaRabim. The hand is connected to the body of the Ani standing in the Rishus HaRabim. So the hand should be Rishus HaRabim, right? And the answer is no, not right. Meaning it's clear from the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah describes where the Ani takes his hand and brings it inside, and the Baal HaBayis takes it from his hand, and the Mishnah says that the Ani did the Akira and the Baal HaBayis did the Hanacha. And the Mishnah does not say that the Baal HaBayis did both the Akira and the Hanacha. So the hand of the Ani is not considered like a Rishus HaRabim. And the Rishus Yachilo Damia Miyado de Baal HaBayis. And the converse is also true. Meaning the Mishnah also gives us a scenario in which the Baal HaBayis stuck his hand outside. And the Ani took it from the hand of the Baal HaBayis. So here's what I'll also tell you. The hand is not like a Rishus HaYachid. Again, the hand is attached to a person who's currently standing in the Rishus HaYachid. And you could have made the argument that, okay, the person's in the Rishus HaYachid, his hand is also in the Rishus HaYachid. And so therefore, when the Ani takes it from the hand of the Baal HaBayis, so he's doing now the Akira from Rishus HaYachid. We don't say that as well. So when the hand is in a different location, the hand is not considered the same location you are. And it doesn't matter whether it's coming from the Rishus HaRabim or from the Rishus HaYachid. So pshitali, Abai says that's obvious to me. Good. So now we're going over the obvious points. Abai wants to know. Now let's go over the points that are less obvious, which are Yadosha Demashitasi Kakarmless. So should the hand be treated now like a karmless? Okay, so brief introduction. We're going to see in a couple of days from now in Daf Vav. that when it comes to Rishir of Shabbos, when it comes to the domains of Shabbos, there are four in total. There is a Rishus HaYachin, Rishus HaRabim. We introduced ourselves to those yesterday when learning the Mishnah. There are two other Rishuyos. Well, it's really three plus one. There's one other Rishus on Shabbos, which is called the Karmelis. What's a Karmelis? A Karmelis is a domain, but it does not define itself. Neither is a Rishus HaYachin or Rishus HaRabim. It's basically any domain that doesn't have the strict definitions of either Rishus HaYachin or Rishus HaRabim. It's branded a Karmelis. One is not allowed to transfer on Shabbos mid the Rabbanan from Rishus HaYachin to a Karmelis. From a Rishus HaRabim to a Karmelis. From a Karmelis to Rishus HaRabim, from a Karmelis to Rishus HaYachin. Okay, that's an Issa de Rabbanan. Fine. There's also what's called a Makom Pater. Now, a Makom Pater, I'd say it's the fourth Rishus. It happens to be the Gemara is going to use that language. But a Makom Pater, it just simply means it's nothing. It's zero. It's an area that's totally exempt. An area, let's say, in a Rishus HaRabim above 10 Tfachim. That's what's called the Makom Pater. It's totally neutral. We're going to learn together later in the Masechta that one can, in fact, transfer from a Rishus HaYachin to a Makom Pater. From a Makom Pater to a Rishus HaYachin. That's perfectly fine. That's 100% mutter. So, the hand over here, as we just learned together, when the Baal HaBayis takes it out, so the hand is not a Rishus HaYachin. And when the Ani takes his hand and brings it inside, it's not a Rishus HaRabim. Maybe now, if it's not a Rishus HaYachin, it's not a Rishus HaRabim, so maybe now it qualifies as its own Rishus. And maybe the hand now should qualify as a Karmelis. Everyone understand what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, to say the least, curious, interesting, it's bizarre. What the Gemara now is going to suggest is that basically, once your hand leaves your domain, so now it does not assume the status of the new domain, it does not retain the status of your domain, so if it's not Rishus HaRabim, and it's not Rishus HaYachid, so maybe it's a Karmelis. Karmelis over here just simply means a domain that is undefined. And so therefore, the Chachamim gave it definition. Now, if you're following me down this road, so you understand now what the Gemara is suggesting. What the Gemara is suggesting is that if your hand now is a Karmelis, so the food that's in your hand, you won't be able to bring back inside. Because now that your hand is a Karmelis, so now the food that's inside is resting in a Karmelis. I know that's a strange Karmelis. It's your hand that's connected to your body. But if your hand now is a Karmelis, so that means now that the food cannot be brought inside. And so for the rest of Shabbos, you're going to be going through one of the most amazing physical feats known to mankind, and basically you're going to be keeping your arm out there until the remainder of Shabbos. If there are 5 minutes left till Shabbos, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If there are hours left before Shabbos, that's right. That's going to be physically taxing, exerting to say the least, really testing your devotion to Hilchos Shabbos. So, mi kansun rabban l'adur l'gabei olo, and did the Chachamim make a knas? Did they give any kind of fine in this regard? The word knas over here, Tosfos makes this point. The word knas over here seems to be a little bit premature in the Gemara, because right now it's more like a gzera that we're looking at. Is there a gzera, is there an issa right now to bring your hand back inside? So, tashma, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's see. Haisa yadom alea peres rotsia l'chutz. So the Braisa deals with it. The Braisa says the following. Your hand is full, you brought it outside. Tznichad, one Braisa told us, Aser lahakzira. One Braisa says you can't bring it back inside. Tini idach, we looked at another Braisa, Mutter lahakzira. You can bring it back inside. Okay, so seems to be, it's a machlokas, that's tanaim. So my labaka miflagi. So the Gemara suggests that now we're seeing exactly this machlokas. Marsavaka karmelis dami, and Marsavaka karmelis dami. One is of the opinion that it's a Karmelis, the other opinion that it's not a Karmelis. This is now what seems to be the exact machlokus of the Tanayim.
So what is it? The Mokum
Patur? No, what do you mean? If it's not a Karmelis, it's your hand. It's your hand. It's your hand which is connected to your body. You're in the Rishus HaYachid, your hand is the Rishus HaYachid. Now again, I know that's difficult to say because we just learned together that when someone takes it from your hand, he's not taken from Rishus HaYachid. Okay, maybe Mokum Patur is a better way to say it. Okay. But the Gemara says no. The Kuli Amaka Karmelis Damya. No, everyone's of the opinion that your hand is a Karmelis. Velokasha, Kanlamata Measara, Kanlamala Measara. It's just a question of where your hand went. Did your hand go above 10 Tfachim or below 10 Tfachim? Okay, some basics that we're going to learn together right now. And that is when it comes to Rishus HaYachid, so there is no height, there is no ceiling of Rishus HaYachid. Let me say it better. There's no halachic ceiling of Rishus HaYachid. When you are in a Rishus HaYachid, the Rishus HaYachid status is the entire Rishus HaYachid up to the ceiling, up to the physical ceiling. And there's no 10 Tfachim where the Rishus HaYachid stops. When you're in a Rishus HaRabim, so there is a halachic ceiling. The Rishus HaRabim is only 10 Tfachim high, which means that anything above 10 Tfachim is not the Rishus HaRabim, it's a Makom Pater. later in this perek, right? In other words, in our first sugya. So they're going to ask the question, when you're carrying something up and you're walking in the Rishus Rabim, and the item you're holding is above 10 tefachim. 10 tefachim is not high off the ground. Somewhere about 3 feet off the ground. So you could be holding an item above the Rishus Rabim. Is that good? Meaning, have you now circumvented carrying something in the Rishus Rabim? The Gemara is going to discuss that later. But right now we're just talking about a person standing in the Rishus Yachid and taking his hand outside. So if you're within 10 tefachim of the ground, so therefore the Chachamim slap that now with the status of a karmelus. If it's above 10 tefachim, okay, so that's a makam patur. That could be that the prices, and the two prices aren't arguing. They're just simply describing two different scenarios. That is another possibility. And the Gemara is going to go through many different possibilities of how to explain these two prices. And the Gemara is just simply deflecting. And the Gemara is saying that the two prices are not arguing about whether your hand is or is not a karmelus. Ebi same, another suggestion on the Gemara. Edivi delamata meyasara. In both prices, we're talking about where your hand went outside, below 10 tefachim. Velav ke karmelus damya. Velavka karmelas damya, and your hand is not a karmelas. Velokasha kami bo'yom kamishecha shecha. And the only difference is, when did you bring your hand out? Did you bring your hand out before Shabbos or after Shabbos? When Shabbos started? After Shabbos started. Mi bo'yom lo kansura banan. Now, if you brought your hand out before Shabbos, so the chachamim didn't make a knas. Mishecha shecha kansura banan. But if you brought your hand out after Shabbos has already begun, the chachamim made a knas. What's the knas? Knas is very simple. You now put yourself in a position where you could be violating the Issa Doraisa of Hotzah. Because all you need to do now is drop it or put it down, and now you did the Akira and you did the Hanacha. So the Chachamim therefore constrained you, they penalized you, and therefore you're not allowed to retract your hand. Masha Enkin, if you took it out Mibo Yom, so then you'll never lead to an Issa Doraisa, so the Chachamim allowed you to bring it back. So the Gemara says, Adarabim Chemistabra. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second. If I'm going to make an argument, I would make an argument in the opposite direction. So look, what would happen if I were to put it down? I did the Akira before Shabbos. I did the Hanacha after Shabbos. Okay, so you're not going to be violating Nisa Daraisa. So maybe under those circumstances, the Chachamim said, look, I still didn't like your behavior. Your behavior was reckless. It was irresponsible. I don't like it. And so the Chachamim said, you know what? Keep your arm out there. In other words, you brought your arm out before Shabbos started. Now Shabbos began while your arm was out. So the Chachamim will tell you, you know what? Good, leave it there. In other words, it'll teach you a lesson. However, liknesu rabbanan. But misha chashecha di shadi layasibu lidechiv chatas. But look, in the case where you brought out your arm after Shabbos has begun. Now again, it's reckless behavior, it's irresponsible behavior, all that's true. But now imagine the Chachamim levied a knas against you under those circumstances. Now what? Chances are you're going to put it down the Rishos Rabbim. You're not going to be able to hold your arm out there that long, right? You're going to need support, physical support, to keep your arm up. So the chances are you're going to put it down. And there, because of the Knas de Rabbanan, so now you're going to be violating an Issa Daraisa. And so if I'm thinking about it, it makes more sense to me, I'm just explaining the Gemara. But it makes more sense to me that if there's ever time to make a Knas, do so in a case where he won't be violating an Issa Daraisa. But don't make a knas where it's probably going to lead to an Issa Daraisa. So, okay. So the Chiv Chatas, lo liknesi rabbanan. Umidaloka machine and hachi now. It's interesting that you didn't say that. And because you didn't say that, so now it resolves another issue, which will be a big topic in tomorrow's daf. Tifsha de Rabibi Barabaye, it helps us resolve now the question of Rabibi Barabaye. To buy Rabibi Barabaye, because the following question was asked. Hidvik patanur, let's say what you did is you stuck bread to the oven. Now, I didn't mean bread, I really meant dough. You stuck dough to the oven. So back in the good old days, the way they baked bread, not much different than us. It's in an oven. But the pitas, what they did is they basically stuck it to the wall of the oven. And that is devekas apas. That's the sticking of the dough to the side of the oven. It's going to bake on while connected to the side of the oven. And then what you have is what's called the redias apas. The redias apas is a skilled activity where you're going to be separating the bread from the wall of the oven. Okay? It's considered a skill. Are you allowed to do Rediyas HaPas on Shabbos? I'm not talking about the baking. Baking is a malacha. I'm talking about just simply the removal of the bread from the oven wall on Shabbos. So the answer is, it's Asr Midrabanan to do so. We will discuss this in more detail tomorrow, but it's an Isr Midrabanan to involve in Rediyas HaPas. Take a look at the Rashi over here, Idbik Pas Batanur, B'Shabbos B'Shogiv V'Nizkar Shu Shabbos Koron Shetayafa V'Kai Malan, Rediyas HaPas Shvus Hi Shi Chachma V'Ena Malacha. It falls under the category of what's called a chachma. It's not a malacha. Sinister de rabbanan. So now let's consider. So on Shabbos, what I did is I clung the dough to the side of the wall, to the side of the oven, on Shabbos. And now, if I leave it there, it's going to bake. And if it bakes, I violated the Issur D'oraisa of Bishul, Afia. So, how about this? Immediately, as I came to my senses, I'm like, oh, let me just take it off right now. Oh, but that's Rediyas Apatz, that's an Issur D'Rabbanan. And so now, the question basically now is our question. Can I violate an Issur D'Rabbanan in order to avoid an Issur D'oraisa? So Mahu, let's read the Gemara again inside. By Rabbi Bia Barba, Yidbik Bas Batanar, Yitiru Lo Lerodosa, Kodem Shehavali Dechiv Chatos, Olo, Yitiru. So did the Chachamim allow you to violate the Issur D'Rabbanan so that you won't violate the Issur D'oraisa? Tisha D'Lo Yitiru. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what you're saying. You're saying it's not Mutter. Or otherwise stated, it's Asr. Meaning, even though it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan, and even though by complying with the Chachamim, you will then be violating an Issur D'Oraisa, okay, so be it. In other words, obviously, you shouldn't have put the dough there to begin with. So fine. So similarly over here, by virtue of the fact that you didn't say, well, if he takes his hand out after Shabbos has begun, where there now is a possibility of him violating Issur D'Oraisa, but the Chachamim constant him and told him he can't retract his hand, even though it'll lead to an Issur D'Oraisa, and you're comfortable with that. So over here, so your conclusion should be, now this was a question, meaning he didn't know the answer, but your conclusion over here should be, let him violate Issur D'Oraisa, but not violate the Issur D'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, Halokasha v'tifsha. So the Gemara's first response is, okay, good. You're right. I would say that over there. I would say it over here. Okay, now you know the answer. V'ibai, same with the Gemara says, La'olam lo'tifsha. Or maybe no. Maybe we don't have to resolve the issue. Obviously, we'd love to resolve the issue, but maybe we don't have to resolve the issue. And perhaps what we can do is we can go back again to the brisos and we can give a new approach to the brisos altogether. V'lokasha kam b'shoge kam b'mezid. So when you took your hand out, when it was filled with food, and you did so on Shabbos, maybe the distinction that one can make is the difference between whether you put it out b'shoge or whether you put it b'mezid. And over here, it's intuitive. B'shoge lo kansu rabbanan, b'mezid kansu rabbanan. If you put your hand out b'shoge, okay. So the Chachamim are not going to penalize you. You didn't do so intentionally. But if you took your hand out intentionally, so the Chachamim said, look, reckless behavior, don't bring your hand back. And I know I made this point before. I'll make it again. It's a funny knas where the Chachamim are making a knas against the person who already intentionally violated the Shabbos by bringing his hand out, which he shouldn't have done to begin with. And now this person is going to listen to the Chachamim who told them, okay, now is the penalty. You can't bring your hand in. But you know, the classic answer is people change. You know, people have a change of heart. Over here, it's, you know, talking about a quick turnaround in terms of his ashkafas, right? To bring his hand out, he said, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. And then he's going to think to himself, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, you know what? The Chachamim penalized me. I'll follow the penalty of the Chachamim. Okay, that's another way to resolve the discrepancy between these two brises. Or maybe in both brises, we're talking about where the hand went out b'shogeg. And now it's just a question of, do the Chachamim incorporate in their gzera even the person who did it b'shogeg, because the next time it'll be b'mezid. And that is at the core of the debate, is that when the Chachamim make a knas, do they extend the knas even to a case of shogeg? And ibai sam lo olam lo kansu. Or maybe we can also say that there was no knas for lokasha, kan lo sechatzer, kan lechatzer cheres. Really, the truth of the matter is there's no knas. And really, the truth of the matter is your hand is not a karmless. And to retract your hand would be perfectly allowable. However, the Brisa says that you can't, is talking about, where you can't bring it into another chatzir. To bring it back into your own chatzir is a courtyard. A chatzir is a reshus yachid. To bring it back into your own courtyard, that's fine whatsoever. And there is nothing that would prohibit it whatsoever. But to bring it into another courtyard, so now, even though technically it's fine, because all you did is just bring it into another Rishus Yachid, I know there's an Eruv issue, but just for purposes of simplicity, bringing it into another courtyard technically is fine. The problem is that now, because an allowance was given that you can bring it into another courtyard, so therefore now what you've done is basically you've accomplished something. Mm-hmm. And the Chachamim, to bring it back to your own courtyard, right, nothing gained, nothing lost. It was in your courtyard, it's back in your courtyard. But to bring it into another courtyard where something is accomplished, maybe for that, the Chachamim banned that kind of activity. Kedavai minei Rava mei Rav Nachman. Rava asked the following question for Rav Nachman. Haisa yedeh malei peros v'yotzil l'chutz mal l'achzir l'oso chotzer. And so here the give and take of exactly our topic, our discussion. If my hand was full and I brought it outside, can I bring it back into my chatzer? Amalei mutter. His response is yes, that's fine. Lechatzer cheres mahu haba, bring it into another domain. Amalei aser. He says no, that's aser. Umayshna. What's the difference? Meaning my chatzer is a rishus yachid. The other chatzer is also a rishus yachid. What's the difference? And so lechul techol ala kur de milcha. And he says when you go measure a kur of salt, it's a funny expression. Rashi over here says now. To appreciate Rashi, by the way, they thought the following. The more salt in you have, they weren't worried about the cardiovascular. They thought that the more salt you have in your body, the smarter you are. Okay? Not suggesting to include more salt in your diet, but that was the Chachmei Yisrael thought in those terms. The Gemara in Kedushin. Right when going over the Hilchos Kibud Av Ha'Em, so one way that they used to describe somebody who was smart was mimulach, right? Salty. In English, by the way, somebody who's salty, it's not positive. It has a negative connotation. But okay, anyway. So he says, look, I don't care how much salt you're eating. Like think it over. So techalav, I'm sorry. Lechi techalav kur demilcha. Hasam lo yisav de machshav aso. Hache yisav de machshav aso. The difference is that when you bring it back into your own chatzer, so you didn't do anything. You're back to zero. But when you bring it to another chatzer, so by finagling, by doing a little halachic complexity, so now you were able to move an item from one chatzer to another chatzer. Obviously, there was no error of connecting the two. Move from one chatzer to another chatzer, and for that, the chachamim did not allow.
It belongs to him.
Could maybe not. Well, if you want, I'll explain that better in just a moment. Let's just quickly recap our morning. The first discussion that we had in our Gemara today is the question of accounting of the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us 8 different scenarios. The Gemara wanted to know, how come we're not counting it as 12? Because in the last 4 cases of the Mishnah, there's an Akira done by one, a Nacha done by the other. That should count now as 2, not as 1. And why not count them as 12? We went through why we don't count the first 4 Peturim of our Mishnah, because that's Pater or Mutter. And even though Shmuel said there are only 3 Pater or Mutters, that's not true. There are more than 3. There are 3 where you're doing an action, and it's Pater or Mutter. The cases of Tzedet, Tzvit, Tzedet, Nachash, Mapis, Morsa, we didn't really explain them in terms of why it's Mutter, but on a future occasion we will. So that is, but that's Pater or Mutter. But those are actions. Inactions, plenty of them throughout the Shas Mishnayos, where, I would say plenty. I mean, the Gemara said plenty, so I'll say plenty. Plenty of them in Shas Mishnayos, where Pater means Pater Lagamre, Mutter Lagamre. Our Mishnah being an example where you didn't do the Akira, you didn't do the Anacha, you just simply received it. Fine. So they don't qualify. So, but still, there is a total of 12 in the Gemara's answer. We saw yesterday. We saw it again today in the Gemara. The answer is that of the latter 4 cases of the Mishnah, we're only counting the one who did the Akira because Asi Lidei Chiv Chatas. It could lead to a Chatas. That was the Amud Aleph. The end of Amud Aleph, we asked the question of from Rebbe. Let's say it's not your hand moving from one location to another, but it's your body moving from one location to another. Someone put the item on you and you started walking. Is that an Akira? The answer is yes. And don't compare your body to the hand. The hand moving from one place to another, your hand is not considered a stationary item. It doesn't remain the status that your body is in. But in terms of your body moving, that is considered an Akira. And then the second half of today's daf, we ask the following question. Now that we've established that your hand is not the Rishus Yachid that you are, and your hand when you're standing inside, and your hand is not the Rishus Rabin that you are when your hand is on the inside of the house, is your hand now going to qualify as a Carmelis? And so that means that when you're holding something and you bring your hand outside into the Rishus Rabin, so can you bring back your hand? Can you retract your hand? If your hand has the status of a Carmelis, so then you would not be able to bring back your hand. You cannot transfer something from a Carmelis to a Rishus Yachid. So would you be allowed to bring back your hand? We have 2 brises. One brisa says you are allowed to. The other brisa says you're not allowed to. And the Gemara went through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways to resolve the difference between these 2 brises. The first way was to suggest that it's exactly the machlokas, that one holds your hand as a karmelus, the other one holds that's not. But the Gemara then went through four different other ways to resolve the differences between these two brises, and it could very well be that your hand does not have the status of a karmelus. The Gemara's conclusion is that your hand does not have the status of a karmelus when it goes outside, and then you'll be able to retract your hand. The only limitation is not to bring your hand into another chatzir, because then it's avdei machshavasa.